Welcome. I think there are some new faces in the crowd, so let me introduce myself again. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President of the Federalist Society and Director of the practice groups there. Thank you all for being here. We're very pleased to resume our Executive Branch Review Conference and our focus today on law and innovation. Today marks the launch of the Federalist Society's ambitious Law and Innovation Project, which is a study of how laws at every level of government affect innovation, entrepreneurship, and the economy. So we're very pleased to use this forum to talk about those issues, and I hope you've had a good day and have enjoyed yourself here. We are concluding our program, not with this event, but with a reception immediately following this address. The senator is going to speak to us for about 10 to 15 minutes, and then he'll take questions from the audience. He has had, Senator Dan Sullivan, an astounding career, and I'm so pleased to be the Federalist Society staff member able to introduce him. I'm only able to touch on a few highlights that I think are most relevant for purposes today, because his bio is so extensive and has been provided to you in advance. He was sworn in as Alaska's 8th U.S. Senator in January 2015. That number strikes me as astounding in and of itself, that Alaska has had only 8 senators. So he serves on 4 committees, and I think most relevantly for our purposes today, the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. Before becoming a senator, he served as Alaska's Attorney General and as Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. In those positions, he undertook an aggressive strategy of initiating and intervening in litigation aimed at halting federal government overreach. So he's a perfect speaker for us here today. He also, in those positions, developed a plan, a comprehensive plan, to streamline and reform the state's own regulatory and permitting system. So he knows about issues at the state level as well. He has clerked for more judges than anyone I ever heard of. That's a feather in his cap. He clerked for Judge Andrew Kleinfeld on the Ninth Circuit, clerked for the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, Justice Warren Matthews, and he also clerked for the esteemed, not that the others aren't esteemed, but Judge James L. Buckley on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. I don't know what order those were done in, but there's an interesting story there, I think. He also serves currently as a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserves, but his bio goes on and on. I suggest you take a look at it after his remarks, and I hope you'll talk today about the Red Tape Act and some other things. But with that, please join me in welcoming Senator Dan Sullivan.
Thanks, Dean, and good afternoon, everybody. Great to be here. I've been actually really looking forward to this event. I know I'm batting cleanup, and you've had a great conference. I want to just thank the Federalist Society for not only the Law and Innovation Conference and focus. I think it's a great, great topic, but also for everything that you have done. I know Gene's here, Leonard, who's very helpful with regard to my campaign. You guys have such an important positive impact that I can't say enough. So I'm really honored, really, really honored to be here to say a few words. The other thing that Dean didn't mention in my bio, I'm batting cleanup, and sometimes that might be the case because, when you look at the seniority of the U.S. Senate, you're looking at number 100 out of 100 here. So that's another part of the bio. I was asked right after, you probably understand some of the arcane ways in which the Senate ranks seniority. I won't bore you with it, but like I said, I'm the last guy in terms of seniority right now. When that was announced, I had a number of reporters coming up wanting to have a little fun with this. Hey, how's it feel to be number 100 out of 100? This is right after the election. I was like, hey, beats the hell out of being 101 out of 100, right? So so you're looking at the last man in terms of Senate, but that'll change hopefully for the better here soon. I want to begin to frame my remarks on the topic today by harking back to the late, great Justice Scalia when he was speaking at the first Federalist Society meeting in 1982. At the inaugural conference at Yale. He surprised many in the audience, I'm sure some of you were there, by not railing against the federal government, but instead he told them this, quote, as Hamilton would have urged you, keep in mind that the federal government is not bad, but good. The trick is to use it wisely, unquote. So have we been using our government wisely? I think in many ways that's really one of the key issues that we all are looking at. Let me give you my answer, and I'm going to set the scene here. Alaska, as you know, in many ways is a very unique state. We have a place in Alaska called Chicken, Alaska. This is in the interior, very, very remote little community. About 17 residents live there full time. But in the summer, it becomes a little bit more populated because it's a place where gold miners come to do mining in the town and scratch out a living doing placer mining for gold. And in late August 2013, Chicken, Alaska, was literally invaded by 8 armed agents, mostly from the EPA. They descended on this group of Alaska gold miners. Family-run businesses, trying to make a tough living in a tough economy, in the wilderness, literally. The agents were looking for Clean Water Act violations. They were carrying guns. They had air support, helicopters. Here's a quote from one of the miners, Dick Hammond. Quote, imagine coming up to your diggings only to see agents swarming over it like ants, wearing full body armor, with jackets that say police emblazoned on them, all packing sidearms, shotguns. How would you have felt? What I was wondering, he said, my God, what have I done? Winds up, he didn't do anything. The EPA found no Clean Water Act violations. And of course, in Alaska, we're still fuming about this incident. EPA never apologized. My First Amendment as a U.S. Senator, which I'm still working on, haven't gotten over the goal line yet, is to disarm the EPA. I'm serious. They were not originally an agency that was armed. They were only armed later. And there's a whole host of federal agencies that you would be very surprised. Our federal agents are armed. Department of Education, EPA, it's a long list. So we're going to continue to work that. Let me give you another example. Is the government being used wisely? Some of you are more familiar with this one. This is at the other extreme. Shell Oil was trying to drill an exploration well off the coast of Alaska in the Chukchi Sea. Under this administration, with the litigation and the federal regulations, it took 7 years, $7 billion, to get permission to drill one exploration well off the coast of Alaska. 7 years, $7 billion, one exploration well for oil. And no company, no matter how big, can withstand that kind of economic burden. So they pulled out. So I don't think there would be an argument in this room that these are the kind of wise government that Justice Scalia was thinking about. More broadly, what do Shell Oil in the Chukchi Sea and Chicken, Alaska gold miners have to do with the theme of today's conference? How and whether the federal government stifles innovation? I would say everything. So in Alaska, what we refer to this, and certainly in Washington the term is used, this is all about federal overreach. When a federal agency takes action through enforcement, through guidance, through the promulgation of new regulations, all kinds of different forms, that exceeds its statutory or constitutional authority. Unfortunately, federal overreach is going to be one of the defining legacies of the Obama administration. Don't take my word for it. This organization knows these issues better than anybody, but we are seeing it not only in terms of what the Congress believes, but what the federal courts are seeing on a day-to-day basis with regard to what's happening with these federal agencies. Let me just provide a couple examples. The EPA's Clean Power Plan. In February, the Supreme Court granted a stay of the plan. I know some of you in this room were actually involved in that. What you might not know is, according to the Congressional Research Service, it was the first time the Supreme Court ever issued a stay or an injunction on a federal regulation before a lower court had ruled on the merits and where the lower court had not granted a stay. First time ever. And the list, as you know, of federal overreach where the federal courts are saying agencies are exceeding your authority is very long. It's this latest EPA case. It's a case that I worked on with Rob Gasway, who's here, when I was Attorney General, and Boyd and Gray, utility air regulators versus the EPA. That went all the way to the Supreme Court. We won that case for the EPA violating the Constitution in a great Scalia opinion. If you haven't read it, you should. EPA versus Michigan last term, same thing. Waters of the U.S., there's a stay on that. The immigration case, there's a stay on that. Just last week on the latest Obamacare ruling, every step of the way, this administration is, in my view, undermining the rule of law, overreaching, ignoring the separation of powers, and creating a legal legacy that is something that is all about federal overreach. How does this relate to innovation? I would say this relates to innovation in an incredibly important way. First, when everything is regulated, and particularly regulations are politically driven, it breeds uncertainty, hesitation for companies to actually take risks and grow the economy. The most glaring example of this is this recent regulation that was not a regulation that was aimed more broadly. It was a regulation from the Treasury Department on the Pfizer-Algeron merger that was directed directly at a corporate deal. Startling because the Secretary of the Treasury, Jack Lew, said in 2014 that his administration didn't have the authority to do this, that, quote, legislation is needed, but then they went and did it anyways. The CEO of Pfizer recently stated that this was an unprecedented, unproductive, and harmful action to the entire U.S. economy. Second, as you know, regulations are dramatically increasing costs with regard to doing business. The average U.S. company is now spending, on average, $10,000 per employee to comply with federal regulations. The average manufacturer in the U.S., about $20,000 per employee. The Obama administration this year is set to break the record by promulgating 80,000 pages of regs. First time in U.S. history. Third, and we all know this, that this kind of federal overreach stifles the economic growth and dynamism of the U.S. economy. This is a topic that never, ever gets talked about, and we're starting to talk about it a lot. The Obama administration's record on the economy has been the worst in 70 years out of any recovery. Never hit 3% GDP growth in one quarter. As a matter of fact, 1.5% GDP growth is the average. The average for the U.S. in the last 200 years is about 4% GDP growth. Last quarter, 0.5% GDP growth. That's not growth, that's stagnation. And yet, no one in this administration comes out and talks about it. So why can't we grow? Why can't we grow? Well, I think it's all about the regulations. I think it's all about the regulations. If you look at what's even going on globally, the Iran economy is set to grow, according to the IMF, 4%. Why? Because of what we did to lift sanctions. And yet we grew at 0.5% GDP growth just last year. So what can we do about this? First, I think we have to talk about this issue, the issue of regs and the issue of economic growth. I left you with a chart here, two charts that I've been using in speeches on the Senate floor. One is just looking at the economic growth record of administrations over the last several decades. And again, if you look at the Obama administration's growth record, it is the worst in 70 years. Never have we hit 3% GDP growth, even in one quarter. So you have this kind of economy that's slowly going down. But you look at the other chart, and what is that? That's federal regulations that are skyrocketing. To me, I believe there is an absolute correlation to what's going on there. The more regs, the slower the economic growth, and the more detrimental impact we have on innovation in the United States. So first, we have to talk about this issue. And one of the things that I think even the Republicans have not done a good job of is talk about this issue, growth, progress. That is the definition of the American dream. And in my view, the candidates who are going to do the best in November are the ones who are going to be able to connect with the American people on this issue. Because there's stagnation all over the country, and we're not talking about it. Second, we need to attack federal overreach. We need to attack these issues. Dean mentioned one bill that I had voted on again in the on the Senate floor a couple months ago. It was called the Red Tape Act, R-E-D, Regulations Endangered Democracy Act. Very simple. One in, one out for regs. If you're a federal agency like the EPA and you're going to promulgate regs, you have to sunset or get rid of the equivalent regs that you have on your books. Four-page bill, took it to the floor, thought I had a lot of Democrats going to support it, thought we were going to get 60. They're doing this in the UK. They're doing this in Canada. It's working. And at the last minute, the other side of the aisle was told, don't vote for Sullivan's bill. Party line, we lost that. We're working on even, you know, other issues. Right now we're debating the appropriations bill for transportation. I literally just came from the Senate floor working with my colleagues on another very simple bill with regard to bridges. There's 68,000 structurally deficient bridges in the United States. So I have an amendment on the floor right now that we're debating that says if you're going to repair or do maintenance or do reconstruction on a bridge and keep it the same size, you should be able to waive every permit, NEPA, ESA, other permitting regulations to make sure we start building bridges in America. I think I got a lot of Democrats who are going to support it, just like I did on the Red Tape Act, so stay tuned. And finally, what we need to do is look more broadly at the issue of creating laws that don't provide federal agencies with such broad authority that they can do what they've done during the Obama administration era, and that's claim the power to essentially do whatever they want. A number of us recently submitted a bill that would focus on recalibrating Chevron deference. And this bill would modify the scope of judicial review for agency actions to authorize reviewing agents, to offer authorize courts to review agency actions on a de novo basis. So the Chevron deference, which I think has been abused, many of us in Congress are looking at changing that structure to, again, put the authority, the Article I authority, back with the Congress, not with the federal agencies. Bottom line, a stagnant economy, overburdened by regulations, is the swamp where innovation dies. And what we need to do is we need to do a much better job to grow this economy, to roll back federal regulations, to have an economy based on less government and more economic freedom. And that's why I'm so honored to speak here and so appreciative of what the Federalist Society is doing on this very important topic. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I think we have some time. We have some time remaining for questions. If you have a question, please use the microphone there in the center of the room, and we'll just take the questions in order.
Yes. Senator, thank you so much for your leadership on regulation reform. I was a committee counsel for Congress. I was Newt Gingrich's first committee counsel 25 years ago. And several years ago, Ed Meese suggested an idea for breaking the deadlock in Washington that he had proposed when he was Reagan's attorney general, which was to give states the same power as Congress to propose a specific amendment to the Constitution. And there are now 900 state legislators and 19 state legislative chambers that have passed resolutions urging Congress to propose a constitutional version of the Reins Act. And it might be that while we're stymied in the Senate, we don't have 60 votes, we might be able to get two-thirds of the states. And I wonder what you think of the idea of mobilizing states to try to persuade Congress to require that major new federal regulations be approved by Congress.
Well, look, in my experience on so many of these issues, if you look at who's really doing the battle on the federal overreach, it often is the states. So, for example, look at the immigration lawsuit right now, where the president, I think, 24 times said he didn't have the authority to do what he eventually did with regard to the immigration executive order that he issued. Well, the state, the reason there's a stay on that is because all the states are mobilized to battle against it. Same with the waters of the U.S. That's something that I've been fighting in the Senate since the minute I got here. We passed the Congressional Review Act law that went to the president to get rid of that federal regulation by the EPA. Of course, he vetoed it, but there's a stay on the WOTUS rule right now because I think 31 different states, including Alaska, have sued to stop that. So in my experience, particularly as an attorney general, a lot of the ground zero of the battle to fight federal overreach actually happens with the states. So the idea that you propose, I think having state involvement because they have so much expertise in these areas is something that I certainly would look at. What we need to do here, what I think we need to do is keep the states invigorated, but let's start invigorating the Congress on these issues. And to me, the combination of talking about this really, really weak, horrible, abysmal economic growth and making the case that it's the overburdensome regulations that I think are clearly driving this historically weak growth, and then making the case to the American people. I was asked this past weekend to provide the response to the Republican response to the president's weekly radio address, which I did on Saturday. And what I talked about was this lost decade of economic growth under President Obama, which there's no doubt, the stats are there. 1.5% GDP growth in almost 8 years. Literally the worst recovery in over 70 years. And what we need to do is make the case that this is why so many people are frustrated and then have policies that address it. And I think one of the key policies has to be working in conjunction with the states, rolling back the federal overreach, which is killing innovation, but more broadly, killing economic growth.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Carl Domino. I'm from South Florida. We have a gentleman that's a friend of mine that's going to be running for president on the Republican ticket. And I love charts. I'm an analyst. I look at this chart and what you said jumps out. But the other thing that jumps out at me, and maybe I'm just misseeing it because my glasses and I'm tired, it looks like that bottom line, which is the new rules promulgated each year, doesn't change regardless of who controls Congress, who controls the presidency. Am I reading the chart accurately? Is those blue dots, that isn't that the new rules? They look, and in fact, even if you look at the cumulative, it looks like each year it changes by about the same month. So I guess the question that many of the voters that voted for Mr. Trump is, does it really matter who's in the White House? Thank you.
Well, look, I think this election is going to be critical. I think if you look at where Hillary Clinton is, I mean, in Alaska, what I refer to on some of the key issues that she's focused on for my state, she's against resource development and Arctic development. She wants to do more in terms of executive actions with regard to the Second Amendment. She thinks the economy is going well. And she thinks the Veterans Affairs Administration is doing a fine job. This is what I call the big four of Hillary in Alaska, and she's 0-for-4. So I think the issues of who controls the White House on these matters is fundamentally critical. And I also think keeping the Republicans in control of the U.S. Senate, we need to do a better job on this, no doubt. But the fact that I could not get one of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to vote for something as simple as the Red Tape Act, what you're doing in Canada, what you're doing in the UK, which is a common sense reform that if you went out and polled the American people, do you think there should be a one-for-one, one-in-one-out law with regard to federal regulations? I bet that would poll 85%. Because the one issue that we forget about, and again, I think it's as much Republicans as Democrats, we talk about regs in terms of how this is hurting big business, how this is hurting, you know, big energy companies. The people who are really, really being hurt by these federal regulations are the small business owners, are the small, the middle class families who are struggling. These are the individuals who, in my view, are being most negatively impacted. And what we need to do is better connect with them on why this matters, this agenda, in terms of rolling back federal regulations, matters to them. And we need to do a better job on that.
Senator, my name is James Maxeiner. I'm at the University of Baltimore. I'd love to add a comment to what you've just said about the one in and one out. And you mentioned that the UK and Canada does that. That's something that the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development has been promoting, better regulation, for 20 years now. And it's very much been my subject of study for a long time. You're probably already aware of the Common Good Organization with Professor
President
Howard there. You might be interested to know they're having a program Thursday morning at Covington and Burling on this very topic, and one of the speakers will be coming from the Regulatory Control Council of Germany, whose job it is to make sure that one goes out every time one comes in, and that the ones that come in are good and make economic and legal sense. So it's in fact called How Faster Infrastructure Approvals Can Get America Moving Again. So I would encourage you all to come. It's totally free, and I think you'd find it very interesting, because I can tell you they're not 140,000 regulations. It's truly one in, one out. You can find them all on the website, and they're not too many.
Well, look, let me thank you for that. And you know, the importance of what you're doing here, the importance of groups like Common Good to help legislators in D.C. get these kind of ideas can't be understated. There was a Wall Street Journal editorial recently called "The Highway to Bureaucratic Hell." And this is what happened. And this is exactly the amendment that I was literally working on the Senate floor an hour ago with Democrats and Republicans. Came down to stories like this. The Bayonne Bridge that connects New Jersey to Staten Island. It's 150 feet tall, and it blocks large cargo ships. So the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey wanted to raise the bridge to a height of 215 feet instead of blowing a $3 billion new tunnel under the river there. As a reward for this rationality, it took 6 months to identify the lead agency for an environmental review that dragged on for over 5 years, and which the pages of that EIS spanned 20,000 pages. So Common Good has ideas, and like I said, one that we're working on right now, the amendment I'm working on the floor would just say, same bridge, all you're doing is lifting it, you're exempted from every permitting, EIS, NEPA, ESA, all the alphabet soup regulations to get this country growing, building infrastructure again. So to me, these are very, very common sense approaches to a really important problem. And whether it's the Common Good or the Federalist Society, your advocacy to continue to help us make the case is going to be critical. So thank you for that information. Thank you very much.